Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Choir Fam Podcast.
I'm Dean Leithy, the Director of Choral Activities at Washington State University.
And I'm Matthew Myers, the Associate Director of Choral Activities at Washington State University.
Back in 2021, we yearned for more connection with choral colleagues we had not seen in months or years and sought out ways to bring our choral community together. We started this podcast to spark more conversations about the current state of choral music and what it will look like in the future.
So here we are. We bring guests from the worldwide choir fam onto the show to share their wisdom and help make our choral world a little bit closer. We hope that by listening to each guest's story, you can find interesting tidbits of knowledge and fresh ideas that you can use in your day-to-day rehearsals.
We also hope that our conversations about the current issues in our field will help us all to move the choral art form forward and make its role more prominent in our society.
We hope you'll enjoy these conversations as we work to strengthen our choral community. Welcome to the Choir Fam. Dean, good morning. How's it going today?
It's going well. It is sunny out. It's been rainy for a few days. It is sunny out. Just got back from the Washington Music Educators Association conference where we both presented. We did something together and you did something yourself. We were, it was the last day. It was exciting to present back home. Spring is among us, sort of. So, yeah, that's kind of how it's going. How you doing?
Yeah, doing all right. Listeners, we're recording on a Wednesday. I feel like I'm just kind of settling into the week because I had two concerts, this presentation, or two presentations, and then a concert last night, too. And yeah, I feel like the week is almost just getting started, but it's halfway over. So I know we've all had moments like this, but yeah, I'm trying to enjoy the busyness as it happens because, yeah, life is filled with a lot of good things.
Yeah, it's at the tail end, it's summer, and you look back and you say, wow, this was a year full of excitement and joy, and at the same time, it's really busy during it. So, yeah. So, Matt, you were kind enough to invite our guest today. Would you like to tell our audience how you know them and why you've brought them here?
Yeah, absolutely. So, Kathy Britton was my high school choir director in grades 10 through 12. And I've been eager and excited to bring her on the show for quite some time. Many of you know, so I've shared this a few times on the podcast before, that it was right around my sophomore year of high school when I decided to be a choir teacher for my life. And that was when I started working with this excellent teacher. So it's so great to have her here. She's received so many honors from state, regional, national organizations for her great work in choral music. And she's also, I think, the best I've ever seen at managing parents and getting them involved in a helpful way that doesn't intrude on your high school choral program. So we have a lot to learn from Kathy Britton.
So for those of you that don't know Kathleen, here's a little bit more about her. Kathleen Britton has been making music her entire life. She grew up in Aberdeen, South Dakota, and then studied music at the University of South Dakota, where she earned a Bachelor of Fine Arts and a Master's degree in music education. She has spent her career largely in Sioux Falls directing middle and high school vocal music programs. Her concert choirs have been selected repeatedly to perform at regional conventions, college music festivals, and even at Carnegie Hall. Show choirs directed by Britton have received top awards at competitions in the multi-state area. Outside school, Britton directed the Asbury Methodist Adult Choir for 15 years and was vocal conductor at the Augustana Summer Music Camp. She has served as clinician and festival conductor at the numerous conventions and competitions throughout the state and region. She traveled to Muscat, Oman, as a festival conductor for the Tazim Festival of Choirs. Britton has fostered the growth of vocal music programs through her work in the American Choral Directors Association, where she has served as repertoire and standards chairperson for the Vocal Jazz and Show Choir, publicity chair, and convention clinician for the North Central Division of ACDA. She also held the office of state president of the South Dakota chapter of ACDA. In 1996, Britton received the Encore Award for Excellence and Achievement in Choral Music, and in 2008 was presented with the Lifetime Achievement Award by her peers in the American Choral Directors Association, the South Dakota chapter. Britton was honored as a South Dakota recipient of the National Federation of High Schools 2011 Outstanding Music Educator Award. She was their North Central Region recipient for the same award in 2017 and in 2020. She also received a national citation from NFHS. So, Kathy, thanks for joining us and welcome to the Choir Fam.
Thank you for having me. This is exciting.
So we were just saying in your bio, you know, you've done most of your work in South Dakota, but tell our audience where you are right now. It is not South Dakota, which is a great thing at this time.
It is not South Dakota. My husband and I are actually vacationing for 5 weeks in Sarasota, Florida, on Siesta Key. This is our fifth year being away for an extended period of time, and our second time at Siesta Key. And so we are enjoying sunshine and much warmer temperatures than Sioux Falls, South Dakota.
Yeah, it's probably, what, like 60 degrees warmer or something like that.
Exactly.
So how have you been occupying yourselves? What type of things do you do on your five-week vacation?
We get out and walk a lot. I think that's important, just health-wise, to stay active. My husband is a guitar player, so we are always shopping for local stores, guitar stores. And he's also a baseball player. So that's why we always add an extra week in March for spring training and to go sit at a baseball field and watch some early baseball. And it's fun. I enjoy it as well. So
yeah, it sounds like a great way to spend some time together and not be so cold.
Exactly.
Yeah. I like the cold at Christmas time. And then after that, I'm just done. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So we ask all of our guests the same open-ended question to kind of get the conversation started. So you can take this in whatever direction you like. How did you fall in love with choral music?
Oh, I think I fell in love probably around my ninth grade year. Yeah. And ninth grade at the time that I was growing up was in the junior high. So it was the first time that we had the opportunity to sing together, full choir, boys, girls. And my teacher, his name was Jim Loseth. I remember it vividly, gave us some music. And I don't even remember exactly if it was a piece of music or just the whole togetherness and the whole let's just make music together first happened. And so I think that it was one of those things that was just a real light bulb moment for me. And as a young, a little 14, 15-year-old girl, to say, hey, this is pretty cool. And maybe it's something I'd like to do. So it was kind of one of those moments as well, life defining, I guess. But it was more the experience than just a moment or a piece of literature or anything like that. It was just the whole experience of singing together.
So was there a point that you realized for sure it was teaching music that you wanted to do? Or were you thinking, maybe I'll be a performer, or maybe I'll go some other avenue of music? When was it that teaching was something you decided to do?
That was more in high school. Although, as a young teenager, to be a performer is, I think, something that all young people like to think might happen for them. I don't have and never have had a trained voice. I never had the opportunity in high school to really take lessons. I did a little bit with my choir teacher at the time, and but not anything. So I came into college with not as much of a performance opportunity or performance ready voice. And I knew that. So I think that that was kind of the transition, was maybe high school. By the time I was done with high school, I knew that I wanted to do something. And I really enjoyed my high school experience so much that I really thought that I could do what my high school director did. And so I kind of came into college with that knowledge and that drive to do that.
Yeah. And so you went to University of South Dakota. And while you were there, was this your first time taking regular voice lessons?
It was. And I loved every moment.
Yeah. So what was that like as, you know, someone who loved singing with a group, but had a little less solo training? What was that like the first times that you were taking those private lessons?
Oh, I just learned so much. It was like this whole new opportunity to explore my range and explore just the quality. And it was like, whoa, this is very cool. So I did. I learned a lot. And it was one of those things that I think carried me through college. And then also, and I would say that it was probably a point that I wanted to make sure that my students, when I started teaching, also had that opportunity to either take voice lessons or from me or from somebody else as well.
Yeah, I definitely remember you highly encouraging us. And there was a really big difference from like my sophomore year when you started. I think maybe three of us were taking voice lessons. And then my senior year, it was maybe 15 to 20 students were studying privately. So I think that encouragement really went a long way for helping our high school program to grow.
Yeah. Well, it does, because the more confident your singers are and the better your singers are, the better your choir is going to be. It just is, it's kind of a natural progression. So
one thing that you did that I did as well when I was teaching high school was that I had made some arrangements with a local teacher to come in and teach lessons during choir. What was it like getting the permission to have a voice teacher, you know, within the building, taking students out of class? Did you have to work very hard with the administration, or were they on board pretty quickly to allow that to happen?
They were on board pretty quickly with that, which is different than the public school experience I had with that. And we can talk about that too. But O'Gorman was very willing to open up that opportunities. And, you know, O'Gorman understands a little bit more, I think, the drive that students have and the want that they have to do better. It's not always evident in public schools. It's a whole different situation.
So had you tried to get a voice teacher as well while you were at Washington, and did that work, or did you have to just fight for it more?
They would not allow it. So I went in with all of my, this is why. And it was, if you want to bring it in, they did not want to charge for it. So it would be something that I would have to pay for, or somebody would have to volunteer their time. And if you want to get somebody like Mr. Stanga or Donna to come in, they would have to do it. Somebody else would have to pay for it or do it volunteer.
Yeah. So I know that's tough when you truly try and it just doesn't end up working the way that you hoped. But
right.
Yeah. But hey, away from voice lessons, let's go back to choir.
Okay.
So what were some of your mountaintop musical experiences at University of South Dakota? You know, you came in excited to be a teacher. I think you left being excited to be a teacher as well. So what were some of those experiences that stick most fondly in your memories?
I think that I was introduced to more languages. And I think that those experiences just broadened my love of, especially like German Schumann. We sang a Schumann piece, and it was like, this is really cool. And it's much cooler in German than it would have been in English. I just remember, you know, saying, well, this makes sense. French, Italian, it was all the experiences, I think, but mostly within the choral world, it was those opportunities to sing the different languages, and not necessarily, you know, one big moment of that. You know, there wasn't like one piece or anything like that. It was just, I think I was just so hungry for the knowledge of what was out there in choral literature. I had no idea. I actually had no idea. Small town, South Dakota. I did not know what was out there.
Yeah. Well, and I loved in high school too, when we would approach one of these classic pieces, we would do it in the language as written. Sometimes there'd be, you know, a kind of bad translation underneath it. And right. I'm thankful that we didn't just switch to English to make it easy. You know,
no. So, no. Right.
And often musically, that doesn't really make it easier because the syllables.
Exactly.
Are, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So you came out to begin your career of teaching. Can you tell us what the first years of teaching were like? What level were you doing? And yeah, what went well and what did you not know that you didn't know?
Oh, my. Oh, that first year. First 2 years, I would say, you just don't know. You just don't know at all, you know, what you don't know. And I learned a lot. My very first year was teaching K through 12 in a very small community right over the border of South Dakota into Iowa. I was still living in Vermilion. My husband was still in college. And so, and we it was our first year married. And so we spent the year there, and it was difficult. It was difficult. And so we decided to move back to Aberdeen where he could finish up a degree. And so my second year and third year was in Warner, South Dakota. And that was also a K through 12 program. I think everybody should teach in a K through 12 program, just so you have a sense of what that's all like. And that, you know, and that's, and it's difficult. If you live in a very rural state, you know, like I do, that's the majority of the jobs out there are K through 12. And so I learned was that I really liked the elementary and I really liked the high school, and I didn't want to do any middle level because, you know, behavior is just, it's a whole different thing, hormones. But I ended up, when we moved to Sioux Falls, teaching 8 years at Patrick Henry Junior High at the time, and I loved every moment of it. So it was a whole different deal when you can concentrate on one level and not have K through 12. So
I remember when student teaching, going from the high school level to then teaching kindergartners for the second half semester. Yeah, just adjusting the way I spoke. Different levels of kids, you know, they don't need to have a conversation in the same way. I generally would speak to high school students the way I speak to adults, you know.
Correct.
Yeah, but kindergartners didn't need that. And
no, and yeah.
So
they don't see. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, when you were teaching K-12, would you have like middle school and high school in one part of the day? Or would you go from like kindergarten to high school to third grade? You know, what was your schedule like?
Oh, I don't know if I really remember. I think I had pretty much in within groups, you know, like the mornings were the elementary, and then early afternoon was the middle level, and then later afternoon was the high school. It was not a very, you know, big, you know, I only had one high school choir. Middle level was, I had a choir and then like a general music class. And then so it was kindergarten through sixth grade was twice a week. I saw those kids twice a week.
So, and then you told us, you know, you did end up teaching middle school for quite some time at Patrick Henry. How did you learn to love that level? And yeah, what were some of the favorite moments that you had teaching that age group?
I learned that if the kids loved and trusted you, they would do anything for you. They will argue with the person next to them sitting there if somebody says something bad about this favorite teacher. I mean, if they like you and trust you, they will do anything for you. So that was such a positive. And it was just so much fun to then take what they were willing to give and do some good work with them on that. You know, that it all translated into how they behaved in choir. Now, I had a general music class, and that was a whole different thing. It was seventh grade general music. And every student had a semester of seventh grade general music, which I really wish they wouldn't have gotten rid of. That would have been cool. But, and then I had girls chorus, and then I had a small ensemble as well. But it was the chorus and the small ensemble that we just did great things. So it was very fun.
And then did a position at Washington open while you were still at Patrick Henry? Was that a direct move across town?
With a year to get my master's. So it was not anything that I had intended on doing as far as moving to the high school. I knew that I wanted to get a master's, to just have more information and just get another degree. Would have loved to have done a master's in choral conducting, but they didn't have that at USD at the time. And going out of state with a small family, I was raising a small family, it just was not possible. So my degree, my master's is in music education, which is great, which is fine. But I love the conducting portion of things. So I got my master's, and at that time, the gal at Washington High School, Dione Peterson, was going to go part-time and take over a fine arts position, part-time teacher, and then part-time fine arts coordinator. So they needed somebody to fill in and work with her for a year while she did that. So I became her assistant. And then the year after that, she became full-time fine arts coordinator, and I took over that job at the old Washington High School for 2 years. So,
yeah, now one of the nicest performing arts centers I've been in. So,
it is.
Yeah. So you said that you didn't necessarily see yourself teaching high school at that point, but the job opened up. Did you feel like, yes, this is home? Or did you kind of miss that middle level energy when you started teaching at the high school level?
If you love good music and good podcasts, you'll love Roots Music Rambler. I'm Jason Falls. My co-host Francesca Folinazzo and I talk to the singers, songwriters, musicians, and more in Americana, alt-country, bluegrass, folk, blues, and beyond. We share our own takes on the latest news in the space and recommend new music for you to explore every episode. Come get to the roots of the music you love. Find us at RootsMusicRambler.com or go wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe to Roots Music Rambler.
That's a really good question. I think I was just so excited to try something new and try something different that, that even though I enjoyed my time at the junior high, I was really looking forward to making more music and maybe a little bit different, higher quality. And, you know, with kids that are choosing to be in that program for the most part. So I think that I don't remember ever thinking, I wish I wouldn't have taken this job, or I wish I would have stayed at the middle level. No, I was just really excited to hone my new skills. I had learned so much in my master's work. So
now, I know at Washington, you got to experience a lot of the world of show choir. So had you had show choir earlier, or was that your first foray into this big behemoth competition world?
There was no such thing when I was growing up. We had a swing choir. And, you know, a little step touch and jazz hands. And that was about it. So when I took over at Washington, Mitchell High School was in full form for show choir. And I remember there were ensembles, and that's what they were called when I went to Washington High School. And so we took and started there, and then I just leaned heavily on Mitchell and their director and spent some time with them and looked at the whole situation and said, I think we can move into this, and thought, how fun to sing and dance. And the kids were all on board. They thought that was going to be just great. And so it was an addition to the program, you know, with the choirs. So, and I wanted to make sure that it didn't become the program. I didn't want show choir to be the number one thing. I wanted my concert choir to still be the number one. I wanted to use show choir more than anything to get kids in the door, because if I can get them into the seats, I can more than likely I can keep them. And so that was kind of in the back of my head. And then I thought, well, what a great way to do that, you know, to get kids into your program.
So as the program got bigger and bigger and more students were getting involved, I know that you did a lot of work with your parent booster committee to get some help running some of those aspects of the program. And audience, I'll say Kathy Britton is the best ever at getting the parents to help without letting them take over everything. I've seen it where parents don't do much, or parents are doing too much. And I always felt that you had a great balance. So how did you get these boosters involved? And how did you decide which tasks to delegate to someone and which things to keep for yourself and all of those things that were involved in working with the parents?
Well, you started small, and I started at Washington. So by the time I left Washington and came to O'Gorman, I had a model in place, but it took me time at Washington High School to talk with parents, and the parents were so willing to say, "What do you need?" And then I would sit down and I would say, "Okay, this is how you can help." And then they were the ones that said, "You know, we could help this way too, and we can help this way." And so they were willing to give some input. There wasn't any, I don't think I remembered one parent telling me that they didn't like what I was programming, that, you know, that they wanted more say in what I was doing. I'm pretty sure that I was pretty, I don't know what the word is, confident that they would do everything that I asked that was outside the musical boundaries of that. And they were, they absolutely, I could not do what I needed to do without their help. So, I don't know if that answered your question or not.
Absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about some of the types of things that they helped with, like planning banquets, costumes, maybe some food for competitions. Like, what were some of the things that you did ask parents to help with? And yeah, how did that help you to hone in on the music more?
The different things that they helped with is they always helped with, well, you just alluded to it. Any type of, well, let's start with just the basic choirs. They helped with robes. They helped with providing some, if we were traveling, show choirs, food. They helped with costuming. So not necessarily picking costumes, but, you know, helping, making sure that if we needed something made, then we had people that were willing to sew. We also did, at Washington, I was very lucky and gifted a fundraiser called the Valentine Dinner and Variety Show, which I eventually took over and did it at O'Gorman, changed a few things, but it's, you know, what better way to promote and earn money for your program than to do what you do. And that's sing and perform. So, the Valentine Dinner and Variety Show was a huge fundraiser, and it was exactly that. There was a dinner, and the parents planned the dinner. We did it at a local hotel that we did a seated meal. And then I hired sound, and we had auditions, and I did the whole musical part of it, but they took care of any costumes. And, you know, the setup of all of that. And it was marvelous. They absolutely just did a great job with that. So those are kind of, and, you know, I've got a whole, booklet that I developed with job descriptions for parents. So when they signed up, like at O'Gorman, when I moved to O'Gorman High School, the very first thing I did was call a friend of mine whose kids had been in the program. And I said, I need two or three parents who would be, before I even meet the kids, I need to meet with two or three parents to help put together this booster club. So before I met any kids, I met with three families And they said, what do you need? And I had this booklet and I said, this is what I've had at my previous school. This will not be the same for you, but let's use it as a guide. And that's how that all started. I just knew how important parental involvement is.
So let's talk a little bit about coming from Washington to O'Gorman. Switching high schools within the same city, I think, has some unique challenges, but also some great opportunities because you already knew a lot about the program. So what was that like coming on over and, you know, after a decade at one school to do the same at another school that was a rival?
Well, it's not only a rival. You're moving from public school to private school. And that in itself was, I had no idea. I know and I understand that kids are kids. So it doesn't make any difference what schools you're at, because there's just certain things about kids that are going to remain the same. But the environment was different. And at Washington High School, we're going from 1,500 kids at the time to half that at O'Gorman, and going from public school to a private school. So at Washington, my program, I built community among parents and among students, and that so enhanced my program. That kept people wanting to come back. That kept kids involved. And, you know, I would have kids that would come to school and say, Mrs. Britton, I'm coming because I want to sing in your choir. I really don't want to be at school, but I'm coming for you. And, you know, so you're building a sense of community and a place for kids to belong. And that's so important. And especially in a community, in a public school like that. So when it came to O'Gorman, that sense of community is already built in. You know, you've got basically a Catholic, it's a Catholic school. So you've got that sense of community, because a lot of the kids and parents have been together for a long time. So it was an interesting for me to figure out my place in all of that. Where was choir going to be? And what was I going to be able to contribute to that? And I found out fairly fast that the kids that were sitting in front of me now just really had a desire to do well, to sing well, to be good at what they are doing. O'Gorman in general has a little bit more of a drive that way. Kids like to be successful. So it's not that I didn't have to build community, because you do, you still do with kids. It doesn't make any difference, you know, if you're in a public or private, because there are some things that kids need to hear, whether it's public or private, but you still are building community. But I could dangle the carrot and they'd respond a little bit more at O'Gorman. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, sure. So we talked a little bit before the show began about retired life and, you know, being part of the choral community with colleagues and so forth is one of the best parts of the job. What is it like entering the retired life and still dabbling in music as you choose? How do you decide which projects to take on and what things to get involved with? And what are the ways that you continue to fill your musical cup?
Performance-wise, I have had the opportunity the last 10 years to sing in the Christmas at the Cathedral Choir. It's a So just a commitment for probably about 7 or 8 weeks. And it's actually been very refreshing because, you know, when you're so busy being out in front and being that choral director, you don't have that opportunity to sing in a choral situation. So, and that's, you know, that's the reason you fell in love with what you're doing in the first place. And so it's been very refreshing to be able to sing again in a choral ensemble. As far as I do some workshopping. I do, if somebody calls and wants me to come work with show choir, I will do that from time to time. But totally, you know, if I'm going to be gone or if I don't have time in my very busy retired schedule, that I just choose not to do that. So I try to stay current with a few things, but you know, the longer I'm away, the harder it is. And so I would love to have the opportunity, and I think I'm going to try to do that again, to attend a conference and just hear some good choral literature, because there's so much out there now that I'm not even aware of. But that would be for my own personal gain and love, I guess.
Yeah, wonderful.
So Matt, do you think now would be a good time to move to the lightning round? What do you think?
Yeah, let's do it. So each of these questions is intentionally open-ended. You know, just whatever comes to mind is a great answer. So don't think too awfully hard.
First, are you a night person or morning person?
I am definitely a morning person. I think that's just from all my years teaching.
What is your least favorite chore?
Cleaning the bathroom.
Yeah, that's pretty gross. If you could be an Olympic athlete, in what sport would you want to compete?
I would love to be a figure skater. I think that would be just marvelous.
What book or TV show would you turn into a Broadway musical?
Probably The Hunger Games. How's that?
That works. And if you could be in the musical, what would you want to play in that musical?
Well, the lead, but that probably would not be. I would not make a good cat. So I would have to think of that. I would have to probably be an older character. So I don't know which, but.
Well, you can pass for anything from 30 feet away. So.
Yeah. Well, that's true.
Yes. That's the beauty of live theater. So.
What is your favorite teaching trick or hack?
Well, there's a number that come to mind. My favorite thing, I'll just tell you what my favorite thing to do on the very first day of school is to sing. And because every other classroom is giving their rules and what their expectations are. And so my very first day is not going to be like that. And all we're going to do is we're going to sing. And it can be as easy as My Country 'Tis of Thee, and we do it in a round, or we do some building of chords or something that's going to make them feel successful, like day one. And so that's one of my favorite things to do, always.
Awesome. Now, if you had to pick one favorite choral piece, which would you pick?
I think the Beeble Ave Maria is probably my favorite choral piece ever done in a double choir setting. Just phenomenal. Gives me all the feels. So
What is one composer that you feel needs more attention?
Well, I think there are some female in general. I think if we could do more to promote female composers, Kyle Peterson is doing great work, and I think that he could probably get more attention. He is phenomenal when he works with kids, when he does commission work. I've seen him put ideas down on a paper, and just from feedback he gets from students, it's phenomenal. It's just, the process is just phenomenal. So pretty cool.
What is your favorite memory associated with choral music?
My favorite memory is singing at, it was in 2006, and I took the concert choir to New York City, and we had the opportunity to go to the walled off 911 area, and it was completely, it was completely walled off except for one section that had glass, and you kind of had to go down a slope, and you could see the construction going on and how they were still cleaning and what they were doing. And it was such a moment for everyone, and parents included. And we sang Pilgrim's Hymn, and it was, my kids couldn't even make it through, you know, it was just, they were holding hands. It was a beautiful moment. And then there was another choir there, and we sang the national anthem with them. And it was, I think I'll never, ever forget it. It was beautiful.
What projects are you working on right now that you're excited about?
Oh, I have no projects. How's that? I don't have to have projects.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
So, yep.
So you've reached the end of the lightning round. Now, if our audience would like to get in touch with you or follow you on social media, how could they do that?
I'm on Facebook and Instagram. So it's under Kathy Clark Britton. And so they can find me down either way. But they can follow my my adventures of being retired and doing some traveling, trying to do that as well. And so I can show them lots of sunset pictures. How's that?
I think that's beautiful.
Well, it was so great to talk with you today, Kathy. We thank you, our audience thanks you, and we're happy to call you a part of the choir fam.
Thank you. This has been delightful.
I'm Dean Leithy.
I'm Matthew Myers.
And you've been listening to the Choir Fam podcast.
Remember to subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you liked the show, please rate and review. If you didn't like the show, please let us know how we can better serve our Choir Fam.
You can follow our Instagram page at choirfampod or email us at choirfampodcast@gmail.com. If you have ideas for guests we could invite, or if you'd like to engage us to work with your choir, just send us a message.
We welcome all our listeners.
Yes, you!
To be part of our minisodes. Just look for our episode, Minisode Intro Part 3, from February 16th, 2024, and send us an email with your answers to our Season 3 Lightning Round questions.
We look forward to hearing from you, and thanks again for being a part of the Choir Fam.